This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome to The People Speak. I'm Malik Johnson. Dao Aung San Suu Kyi is a 62-year-old, nonviolent and pro-democracy activist and leader of the National League for Democracy in Myanmar, better known as Burma. As a Buddhist, Suu Kyi has won the Raftel Prize, the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought from the European Parliament, the United Nations Presidential Medal of Freedom, and won the Nobel Peace Prize for a peaceful and nonviolent struggle. Nevertheless, Dong Aung San Suu Kyi, the rightful Prime Minister of Burma, is currently living under indefinite house arrest in Burma, and by force under Burma's ruling military dictatorship, the State Law and Order Restoration Council. Joining us today is Jeremy Woodrum from U.S. Campaign for Burma. Thank you for joining us here at People Speak, Jeremy.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Jeremy, how did you begin to get involved with this issue involving Dong Aung San Suu Kyi?
Well, I got involved with this about 10 years ago. At that time, really, truly, no one knew anything about Burma at all. And I actually met her husband, who at the time was speaking about her situation in the United States. He unfortunately has since passed away, but that's how I first became introduced to the issue.
You got involved with her husband?
I'd learned about Burma a little bit, but he was the person who inspired me more to get involved more seriously.
You used to work with Free Burma Coalition of Dr. Zarni, didn't you? For a brief time.
Uh-huh.
Could you tell us why you left that organization and helped co-found U.S. Campaign for Burma with Dan Beaton and Aung Ding?
Oh, yeah, sure. We'd been doing that for a long time, and when we started, there were not Burma organizations that were based around the world. It was mainly just outside the United States, but then there was a group that started the Burma Campaign UK. There was a group that started in the Philippines, Australia, everywhere. So we didn't really feel we should be calling ourselves the International Free Burma Coalition anymore when mainly our work is focused on the United States and others were doing similar work elsewhere.
But Dr. Zarni also returned to Burma, and he wanted a policy shift from the organization. What was that policy shift?
Well, the democracy movement inside Burma and the National League that's set by the National League for Democracy, that's the organization that won Burma's last democratic election. They were never allowed to take power. They've called for the international community to put pressure on Burma's military regime, similar to how the anti-apartheid movement and the ANC in South Africa called for pressure on the South African authorities in the 1980s. And so that's what we support. Of course, not everyone's going to support pressuring a military regime, but we think that supporting Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel Peace Prize recipient, is the way to go. And so he parted company with us on that.
But in fact, Dr. Zarni wanted to somewhat accommodate them in some ways, did he not?
I suppose you could put it that way, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with accommodation and dialogue, and I mean, actually what we're working for is peaceful national reconciliation in Burma, but what we don't want to see are U.S. oil, natural gas companies going into Burma in a major way and signing deals with the military regime, and that's what we've worked hard to prevent as much as possible. We don't really see that as accommodation as much as we do capitulation, because that would bring the military regime billions of dollars per year and profits, and they would have no incentive to negotiate with their own people whatsoever.
Dong Aung San Suu Kyi's father, Aung San, was in fact a hero in Burma. He helped fight for Burma's independence from the United Kingdom, and he was murdered when Suu Kyi was only 2 years old. The United kingdom basically gave independence to Burma in January 1948. And at this particular time, I believe Aung San Suu Kyi was living in London, was she not?
At that time, when she would have been 2 years old, you know, that's a good question. I'm actually not sure the answer to where she was at that time. I think most of her family was living inside Burma.
She was certainly educated in the United Kingdom and India, and she returned home.
Exactly. She did. She went to school in India and in the UK, and that's where she got her advanced degrees. And she also studied for a time in Japan.
And she returned home to help her her mother, who was ailing at the particular time. And she got involved go ahead.
Yeah, this is a woman who had, you know, for all practical purposes, wanted to be a scholar and, you know, had traveled around the world, studied, international relations, and then, married a Michael Aris, who was a guy who grew up in the United Kingdom. He was not Burmese, and they had a couple kids together. And, you know, she was always very interested in politics and followed the situation very closely, but not quite sure about where to plug in. But in 1988, there was a nationwide uprising in Burma, sort of similar to what happened in Tiananmen Square, but on a nationwide level, not just in the capital city. And at that time, Aung San Suu Kyi had recently traveled back to Burma to be with her mother, who was dying at the time, and she was swept up into the demonstrations. And because of who her father was and her family pedigree and heritage, the democracy movement asked her to be the face of the Burmese democracy movement.
That's how she gets involved. I was always curious about that. And now she's involved. And there's this State Law and Order Restoration Council. Initially, it was this particular state, the military regime, they had renamed Burma to the Union of Myanmar.
Yeah.
Who leads this organization?
The leader of the military regime is a man named San Shwe, and he has been really in power there since 1992. But there have been previous military dictatorships before him since 1962. They had some level of legitimacy through the 1980s. They pronounced they were on the Burmese way to socialism, they called it, which was really just crony capitalism, which bred corruption. It wasn't any sort of real socialism whatsoever. Didn't benefit the people at all, but they kind of dropped the pretense of that after the 1988 uprising, and now San Shui has been in control since he consolidated his power in 1992.
What is he proposing to do for those in Burma?
Can you say that again?
What is he proposing to do to help those in Burma?
They're not doing anything to help the people in Burma. I think his primary objective is to protect the army. He's a military man himself, and at least in their rhetoric, they always say that the military is the mother of the country, and there can be no country without the military. So if you're in the army inside Burma, you have an elevated status in society because of the military regime. And I think for him, that's probably the bottom line, is protecting the military. Under his rule, healthcare has been destroyed. HIV/AIDS has taken off like crazy. Forced labor, the kind of worst human rights abuses are going on there.
I understand that a general election was called in Burma in 1990, whereupon, basically, Aung San Suu Kyi won. She legitimately should be the prime minister of Burma.
Yeah, exactly. What happened was that after this huge uprising in 1988, the regime killed anywhere, we don't know exactly, between 3,000 and 10,000 people on the streets of Rangoon, just opened fire on people, executing demonstrators, nonviolent demonstrators on the street. Despite all those killings, they still couldn't maintain control over the country. The people were so angry and wanted change. And so they announced that they were going to have an election, which is exactly what the people wanted. They wanted a chance to have a voice in their own future. And so it calmed down the demonstrations a little bit. The National League for Democracy was formed and participated in the elections, and they won. They won 82% of the seats in Parliament. I can't think of that kind of victory anywhere else in the world.
And they killed approximately 10,000 people, which, of course, you compared it to Tiananmen Square in China. I was curious, what type of conditions is Suu Kyi living under?
She's in total isolation. She doesn't have anybody living with her. Her doctor can visit her every couple months to do checkups. We understand that her health is good, but that's it. Other than that, she's completely cut off from the outside world. And, you know, I'd have to say that, and I believe that she would say this too. She's very much a humble, not a self-serving woman, and leader, I should say, also. And she, if you drew attention to her house arrest, she would immediately point to thousands of other people who are in real prison and say, "I haven't suffered nearly as badly as they have." She doesn't like to dwell on her own suffering. At the same time, for those of us who aren't going through that, it's really terrible what's happening to her.
In fact, I believe the U.S. Coalition for Burma, you compared her to Nelson Mandela. What are the comparisons there?
Yeah, I think the main comparison is that it's almost, her and Mandela are almost unparalleled in the world in that they personally embody the aspirations of their people. You don't really have leaders like that, and some people say you don't have heroes, or not very many public high-profile ones in the United States anymore. But these are people who, the people of their country universally would like to emulate them and be like them, and they embody the type of change that the country would like to see in their type of society. It's a far cry from the sort of split-level, you know, split elections that we have in the United States and elsewhere these days.
Is there any hint of change there in Burma, particularly by the State Law and Order Restoration Council, of changing their past actions and seeking more democratic-type country?
There's hints all the time. I think the problem is that the regime puts out these hints on, they use these hints. For example, just in the last week, they released 50 political prisoners inside Burma out of 1,200, which normally would be very positive. The problem is that they had arrested over 70 over the last several months. So there's been more in prison than were a few, you know, several months ago. So they do things that are moving in the right direction, but it's hard to tell whether those are sincere or not. But Aung San Suu Kyi, when she was released, spoke about this. And she said, you know, look, change never comes till it actually comes. And I think that's what things look like in Burma right now. I don't think change is just around the corner, but it's hard to know until it happens.
If Aung San Suu Kyi is so very popular in Burma, and there is this military dictatorship, the State Law and Order Restoration Council,
yep.
Why hasn't there been I would expect there to be some civil unrest.
There has been a lot of civil unrest in Burma.
Oh, there has.
Yeah, the problem is that the mainstream media almost never reports it. In fact, in 2003, Aung San Suu Kyi was briefly released from house arrest, and she went on speaking tours around the country, and hundreds of thousands of people came out to see her speak. And actually, in one sort of interesting case, and I mean, it's not just that they came to see her speak, but it's that they risked their lives, livelihoods, jobs, and could have even possibly been killed for doing so. It's hard to imagine that happening in a country like North Korea or Saudi Arabia, but the Burmese showed the courage and the tenacity to come out and talk. In one place that she spoke, the military regime cut the power to the entire town, and she was scheduled to speak at 9 o'clock at night. So she used a generator for a microphone system so that the audience could hear her. And at the same time, the Burmese people who smoked too many cigarettes and this kind of Burmese cigar called a cheroot all pulled out their lighters and held them up like a huge rock concert while she gave a speech about human rights and democracy. And I've seen some of this on film, and it sends shivers down your back to see hundreds of thousands of people living under a totalitarian state calling for human rights.
How long has she lived under, and how long has she been detained collectively? Do you know?
Yeah, over 11 of the past 17 years in total. She's sort of been in and out of house arrest, but she's been under constant arrest since 2003.
And were any allegations or a trial or anything at all, or just did the military just say, no, you, house arrest, or you go to prison?
No, they didn't. There's no trial whatsoever, and even if there were, it wouldn't be fair because all the judges are handpicked and usually from the military itself. But she hasn't even been tried. There has not even been a kangaroo court sort of trial for her at all.
What threat does she pose to the military dictatorship by releasing her? allowing her,
how she threatens the Burmese regime is the same way that Gandhi threatens the Indian government and that Nelson Mandela threatens the white-only government in South Africa, and that's in personal popularity. And because she's so principled, because she has a name that makes her recognizable, because if she calls on the Burmese people to do something, they will. That's the threat to the Burmese regime.
When she went on internationally,
in 2003, when she began, 2,000 or 3,000 people were showing up to see her speak in each spot inside Burma. But like I said, by the end there was 100,000 people. That's when they cracked down on her and put her back under house arrest. We think it's probably because the people's hopes were being realized publicly.
I know a lot of celebrities have tried to bring this particular issue to the international forefront, such as Paul McCartney, and U2 and some other artists. Who in particular in the international community, aside from these the aforementioned, have brought some type of attention? I understand that the current Secretary General of the United Nations said in a statement that, quote, the sooner restrictions on Aung San Suu Kyi and other political figures are lifted, the sooner Burma will be able to move towards inclusive national reconciliation and the restoration of democracy and full respect for human rights. I know the United Nations Secretary has at least spoke on this, the current one. What has the United Nations as a whole done to help?
Well, I think you just summed up the problem right there. The UN, there's been a lot of talk from the United Nations about Burma. Some would maybe even argue too much talk and not enough action. So over the past 16 years, every year the UN General Assembly has passed a resolution calling for change inside Burma, which is good, but it's not enforceable. Over the past 13 years, the Commission on Human Rights at the UN has passed a resolution on Burma, which is good, but it's not enforceable. Kofi Annan, the previous Secretary General, and this Secretary General have made countless statements, especially Kofi Annan calling for change inside Burma, but did very, very little to back it up. So we're pushing them to do something concrete. We're seeing some good signs from this new Secretary General, and we hope that he goes further. I wouldn't say his performance in the first, whatever it's been in the first 7 months has been sterling. The primary problem on Burma at the United Nations is China. The Burmese military, there was a proposal that would have been enforceable to require peaceful democratic change inside Burma at the United Nations Security Council. It was supported by a majority of the countries on the council, had enough votes to pass, and China vetoed it.
Now I'm starting to see the light, because I understand the United Nations Working Group for Arbitrary Detention on 28th of May 2004. They in fact said that Aung San Suu Kyi's deprivation of liberty was arbitrary, as being in contravention of Article 9 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 1948. Now I'm starting to understand why there has been so little done by the United Nations, and why there's been so much talk by the United Nations. Let me ask you about the United States. What has the United States of America done as far as foreign aid or economic pressure or any proposals against Burma? What have we done?
Sure. Well, the United States' record has been mixed. It hasn't been great. It hasn't been bad. The good thing is that the U.S. Congress has been active on this, and so many members of Congress have pressed the U.S. to make it illegal for U.S. oil and natural gas companies to do business with Burma's military regime, and they were successful in that, and we helped them and supported them. It's now illegal for any U.S. multinational to do business with the Burmese military regime, which is fantastic. It's a huge, major step forward. And to some extent, the Bush administration has been okay with this. They didn't spearhead it themselves, but they also didn't try to block it. It was spearheaded by members of Congress. So that's sort of the good part. The downside is that they have not been willing to expend very much effort on pressing China to modify its position on Burma. It's sort of like the U.S. did something small and then that was enough. We're pushing them to do more. We think that as the most powerful country in the world, the U.S. has a greater response. You know, if they have greater power, they also have greater responsibility to do more as well. And they need to push China on this. They need to speak more publicly about it. But of course, the U.S. is not really in a position to be. You know, it's hard for the U.S. to talk about human rights these days because of our own record in Abu Ghraib and elsewhere.
On one hand, The United States of America gives Aung San Suu Kyi the United States Presidential Medal of Freedom. And on the other hand, the United States of America does minimal because of China being on the, of course, Security Council as a permanent member, in fact. That's problematic. So that's what about the United Kingdom? I understand that, of course, you know, already know that Gordon Brown is now the new British Prime Minister. He wrote prior to his becoming Prime Minister, he spoke of Aung San Suu Kyi. She said that her courage is the courage to sacrifice her own happiness and comfortable life so that through her struggle she might win the right of an entire nation to seek happy and comfortable lives. It is the absolute expression of selflessness. Paradoxically, in sacrificing her own liberty, she strengthens its cry and bolsters its claim for the people she represents. What do you think he will do about this particular situation in Burma?
Well, I hope he, like the UN and like to some extent the U.S., will move beyond words. I mean, I'm not in a position to predict what he will do, but I think the bottom line is that the world needs to do something that's enforceable and that's concrete. I mean, it's one thing to sort of pay lip service to an issue, but it's entirely something else to do something serious and concrete that could suggest change. And so I hope that he is willing to do that. That would include barring UK companies, especially the oil and natural gas, from doing business with Burmese military regime, and also pressing for a ban from the entire European Union, which, of course, the UK is part of.
And in particular, what would you like the United States of America to do?
Well, we would like the United States to press on China. I mean, they press on China on trade issues, on, you know, intellectual property issues, on investment issues. They ought to press on human rights. I mean, it's not, if multinationals can globalize in today's world, there's no reason that human rights shouldn't be able to also. And we feel like it generally gets second shrift, and that if the U.S. is going to raise Burma with China, it seems like it always comes up rather low down the totem pole, and they need to make it more of a priority. But look, I don't just solely pin this on the U.S. government. I mean, the U.S. people need to speak out more strongly about this too. I mean, in a sense, the U.S. has been reasonably good on this issue. The problem, I think, one weakness is that the U.S. people have not spoken out enough. So there have been some celebrities that have spoken out on Burma, but there haven't been any celebrities that have really taken it up as a cause, like sort of how you might say George Clooney and some of the other ones are doing on, and Don Cheadle are doing on Darfur. There haven't been celebrities who have sort of taken it to that level, and we think they need to speak out more too, because, I mean, let's face it, in today's world, those are the guys that a lot of times capture the headlines.
Do you think the situation in Burma is comparable to the situation in Darfur, Sudan?
In some ways it's better, in some ways it's worse. In Darfur, I think the estimate is 200,000 to 400,000 dead. I don't think that many have been killed by Burma's military regime. That's, in that way, Burma's better. In ways that it's worse, the regime in Burma has destroyed 3,000 ethnic minority villages. You have a couple million people that have had to flee because of that. That's twice as many who have had to flee in Darfur. Essentially, you have the regime in Burma is doing all the same things that the regime in Khartoum and Sudan is doing to the people in Darfur. There's no difference whatsoever. I think the difference is that you don't have the same death rates because it's happening in the jungle in Burma. So people can run away and they can hide and they can survive for enough of a period of time till they can flee as refugees. In Darfur, you're talking sand and it's in the desert. Once your house is burned down there, you're very likely to perish without help.
Aung San Suu Kyi won the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought. Has Russia helped anyway with the situation in Burma?
Russia has not helped at all on the situation in Burma. Unfortunately, it looks like they may even be preparing to build a nuclear research reactor inside Burma, which is not a reactor that would be used to produce weapons. But, of course, the education that comes along with that could eventually produce that kind of know-how. It's not sort of a really short-term concern, but the deal was just announced, I believe, about 2 months ago, and so it is a concern for the medium term and for the long term. I really don't think that Southeast Asia needs an arms race when you got a military regime in Burma and some of the neighbors that spend so much money on arms, instead of spending money on their own people, it's really not helpful for the long term.
You were talking about the Southeast Asians, in particular the Philippines. I understand that the Philippine government has, in fact, spoken out against Burma and the rogue military of Burma. Are there any other Southeastern Asian countries who have supported Suu Kyi?
They have called for her release. In fact, most of the Southeast Asian nations have called for her release. They're not sort of willing to go further and place sanctions on the military regime, which is too bad. But they are willing to go a certain distance and call for her release. I think their fear is that if they press the Burmese regime too hard, the regime will be pressed into the arms of China, and from which it will never emerge, and then things will never change. I think that fear is partially well-founded, but not entirely. And that's why we as an organization are going to be launching a campaign about to reveal to the world China's support of this brutal military dictatorship inside Burma. I don't think most people even know what or where Burma is, but beyond that, I don't think they know that China is bankrolling it, and we're going to tell that story.
Let's see. We have the United Nations, an international organization, somewhat respected in the world, who sees this situation, comments on it, does very little. We have the United States of America, who gives Aung San Suu Kyi the United States Presidential Medal of Freedom, does very little. We have the United Kingdom, Gordon Brown, of course, the Prime Minister, who even writes about Aung San Suu Kyi, and probably will do very little. We have Russia, who gives Aung San Suu Kyi the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought, and does very little. We have Southeastern Asian countries who've spoken about it and see what's happening, and they, too, are doing very little. What's the problem here, Jeremy? We've got a problem here. We got all these entities here who are doing very little but talking a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. I think he summed it up very well. And I think that the challenge here is to get people to match their action to their rhetoric. I think what's really going on is everyone's waiting for someone else to do it. I mean, they're all waiting for someone else to take that first step. And they're all afraid at the end of the day that China will undermine any action that they take. The Southeast Asian countries are afraid that if they ban oil and gas investment with the Burma's military regime, China will take that oil and gas investment. The key factor here undermining all of this is China. They are the ones that hold the power. They are the ones that have the influence over the Burmese regime. If they were to tell the Burmese regime to make some changes, the regime would have no choice but to say yes. China has tremendous influence over them, just as they do in Sudan, too. You know, I mean, they didn't use their influence in Sudan for a year, and as soon as they decided to, they increased the amount of troops or African Union peacekeepers there from 3,000 to 20,000 when China finally got serious about it.
How can we help? How can we help change the policy of China as relating to Burma and at least recognizing that Aung San Suu Kyi is entitled to her liberty and most certainly entitled to be Prime Minister of Burma? What can we, the listeners, do in our various countries?
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes when I think about human rights, you know, it's easy to get lost in sort of numbers of thousands of political prisoners and people killed, refugees that have fled from their homes. And I think a better way to think about it is, what would you want to happen if something happened to someone in your family? You know, if your brother or sister or mother or father was kidnapped, or you got a knock on your door at midnight and someone took someone away from your family that you weren't ever sure if you were ever going to see them again. I think what you do, and I think what everybody would do, is first they call their neighbors, they call the local newspaper, they call their relatives, they probably call the mayor, they might call the local police chief or their senator or member of Congress. They'd make a biggest stink about it as possible. They would want everybody on their side. And if someone didn't come on their side, they would never forget that. And I think that's what we need to do for the Burmese people. I think everyone needs to start speaking up about this more, figuring out how they can get involved locally, and taking as much action as they possibly can, and imagining as if the people of Burma were their own family members. Now, that's a broad description. I think specifically what we have to do is organize campaigns all around the world calling on China to be more reasonable in its treatment of the Burmese people, calling on China to truthfully and calling on China to support human rights in Burma, not just giving them free pass on this issue.
You know, Jeremy, this is certainly the first step. I almost assure you that many people had never heard of Dong Aung San Suu Kyi. And many of you were talking about you didn't know if many people knew where Burma was on the map. I think that with the show, people will start trying to find out if they didn't know otherwise. And I certainly think this is a wonderful opportunity to focus on something, a woman who's so very courageous, who in fact is fighting an entire military and rogue regime. Basically, her being in the forefront. And she's not only fighting the military regime, she's fighting China. And she's fighting the apathy of Russia, of the United Nations, of the United States, European Union, other Southeastern Asian countries. And she's certainly a beacon of light. She really is. And that's why I was really excited about doing the show, because she is, in fact, an individual who gives the world hope. I want to know in a little bit more detail about the living conditions of Aung San Suu Kyi. How does she get her food? Is she allowed any free time to leave at all? Is she guarded by the Restoration Council? Is she able to speak to the outside world in any capacity and speak to her children? She has two sons, I understand. Is she able to speak to them? Could you tell us a little bit more about her in particular and how she's living?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not easy. She's in complete isolation. There is someone who brings food to her, so she does get that on a regular basis. She doesn't accept nice things because she doesn't believe that she should be treated any different than any other political prisoners. So she would refuse, I don't know what you call it, perks. Her house is guarded by soldiers with machine guns. Her street is blocked off, also guarded by soldiers with machine guns.
She lives in
a compound that she inherited from her father. It's a family home, and she's been there for a very long time, but it's completely run down. It's a mess. There's snakes that are around there, which, of course, the military regime does not take care of. It's just not safe. She, in terms of her daily activities, she spends a lot of time meditating. She spends a lot of time exercising, and she spends a lot of time reading. But there has not been a message from her to the outside world since 2003 in the last 4 years. I mean, I think she is probably literally the world's most prominent political prisoner, and we haven't heard anything from her in 4 years.
What has she written that we can go, the listeners can go research and listen to and read?
Sure. She wrote, her husband helped put together a book of her essays called Freedom from Fear, which I think is one of the most moving sets of essays that I've ever read in my entire life, and especially her Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech is incredible, where she talks about Burmese history and culture and relates it to the desire for human rights and includes the desires of Buddhism in there as well. So she also, we have on our website a list of several of her speeches, but you can look up her name online and you'll find her writing everywhere.
Tell me about your organization, the U.S. Campaign for Burma. I understand that you organize hundreds of, quote, arrest yourself, end quote, house parties. What is that about?
Yeah, sure. Well, we're trying to build up mainstream knowledge about what's going on inside Burma. So for the last 3 years, we've asked people on Aung San Suu Kyi's birthday, which is on June 19th, or the nearest weekend to that, to stay at home themselves for 24 hours, to arrest themselves and put themselves under house arrest as she is under house arrest. And, you know, we started out, we had about 20 events the first year, and then the second year, it's actually been 4 years, we had 20 events, then 60 events, then 200 events, and this year we had 300 events across the United States. So it's growing. I have a feeling next year it's really going to take off. and enter the U.S. public consciousness more. But during those events, while people are at home, we ask people to invite guests and friends over for a portion of the time that they're under house arrest and show a video on Burma and help explain what's going on and do letter writing campaigns and also raise money while they're there at those events. So we had 300 of them this year, and I think it's even going to take off more in the future. But that's just part of our public education efforts.
Yeah, it's not only arrest yourself, it's detain yourself, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Detain yourself for 24 hours, that's right.
And not only is
that, detained in the U.S. where everyone has televisions and video games and phones, it's a lot different than her house arrest.
Yeah, it was arrested and detained. And also, you would have to mimic the limited communication with the outside world as well. Do you all stress that with these arrests yourself?
The difference in what we're doing is we ask people to detain themselves for 24 hours, but then to host a party during it. So it's not quite, in fact, it's not at all like hers, but it's a symbolic sort of protest. We didn't want people to stay home for 24 hours because we thought they should be talking to people about Burma. And so that's why we ask people to hold events and to invite people over.
What other organizations out there who are like yours, the U.S. Campaign for Burma?
We're the only organization in the United States that's doing this, that's trying to raise awareness about Burma, just trying to, in a public, concerted way, impact U.S. foreign policy on Burma and support United Nations actions on the country. Other organizations do more limited things, like look at, health care in refugee camps or help provide food for refugees or homes for former political prisoners. But in terms of the overall situation, it's us.
Well, isn't the Freedom Campaign helping as well, which is part of a joint venture of the Human Rights Action Center? Are they involved?
And I just lumped that in there because we're the same organization.
You all are both under the same umbrella.
Yeah, we use that moniker when doing some of our work with celebrities because to have a more international name instead of just U.S. Campaign for Burma, but we all work together.
I understand that the Archbishop Desmond Tutu is an honorary member, is he not?
Oh, yes, and he's been extremely active on Burma. He's been, and on Aung San Suu Kyi's case, probably one of the most active people in the world. He knows this issue inside out. He knows all the facts, all the details. He's extremely well-informed. He does all of his homework. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to Burma.
And then there's the former Czech Republic president.
Uh-huh.
Havel, I believe is the name.
Yeah, Václav Havel as well. These are guys who had to overcome authoritarianism or totalitarianism or repressive forms of government in their own countries. And I've always found that their advice and their help is more important or more inspiring, I think, than people who haven't had to live through it themselves. I've never been through that kind of a life, living that kind of life myself. So to hear them talk about it, they've been through it, they've had to risk their own lives is incredibly inspiring.
So what is your organization's next step in furthering this particular cause? What are you doing? What are you planning now?
Well, there's a couple things. We're trying to push Burma into the limelight. So I just got back from a trip to the Thailand-Burma border to visit refugees who fled from Burma with one of the cast members of the television show CSI, Crime Scene Investigation. And so we did a press conference at Bangkok in Thailand after the visit to the refugee camps to help draw more attention on the issue. I'm going to be bringing a lot more people with prominent names and from prominent acting and music backgrounds over there in the near future. So that's one part. But the second thing is that we are going to be launching a full-scale public relations campaign to expose what China's doing on Burma. And the point of that is not to just sort of say China's bad because we're not meant to sort of name-calling. The point is that we want China to modify its position and support human rights inside Burma. We'd like them to make some positive changes. For the past 10 years, we have not criticized China. We felt that we could possibly deal with them through quiet diplomacy and ask them to be reasonable and appeal to their better senses, but it just hasn't worked. And I think our experience is similar to other human rights campaigns on other countries who have related to China. They found that quietly, China hasn't gone anywhere. It's only when they're embarrassed and shamed publicly about their position that they're willing to make some sort of changes. So we're going to be launching petition campaigns, letter writing campaigns, asking prominent people to speak out, we want China to be more reasonable in its position, and we're going to be doing that publicly.
We have today Jeremy Woodrum from the U.S. Campaign for Burma on The People Speak. Jeremy, there are a number of people, I know callers, who want to ask you a couple questions. Would you mind answering a couple questions?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much. We have right now Mike, California. Mike from California, please ask your question of Mr. Woodrum.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy, for coming on the show. I've been following the campaign to free Aung San Suu Kyi for 2 years now. And I've noticed that there have been ups and downs. In fact, this latest time when they, her, I guess what you call it, is a parole review or something, where they were considering her release, there were great hopes for her release. Could you speak about that? And, you know, I was released. Would she leave Burma? And happen if she is released? Thank you.
Sure. Well, yes, I think hopes were raised that she could be released this last time around, and probably our organization contributed to those hopes through our work. We helped to organize a letter from 59 former presidents and prime ministers to call for her release shortly before her detention was extended a couple months ago. Sorry, hang on one quick minute. I apologize for that. So beyond that, if she was released, I think it's very unlikely that she would leave the country. She's been offered to leave the country numerous times, and she's turned it down every single time. In fact, in 1999, her husband, who was British, was dying. He had terminal cancer, and he was unfortunately passing in the UK. And the military regime told her that she could go see him in the UK and be with him on his deathbed. This is her, you know, husband who she'd spent decades with. And she told the military regime, no, I'm not going to leave my country. I want him to come here and see me. And the military regime said no. So she was literally in a position where she had to choose between seeing her dying husband or continuing to work for her country. The reason she wouldn't leave is because she knew that the military regime would never let her back. So she chose her country. That's the kind of stuff that leaders are made of, and I think that make ordinary people extraordinary because they have to make extraordinarily difficult decisions. But she felt ultimately it was the right thing to do for the 50 million people inside Burma, so she stayed there. So I think given the amount of opportunities she's had to leave the country and the number of times that she's turned it down, I think there's no chance that she would leave. She's staying in Burma for good. And unless perhaps there was a transition to democracy, then she might consider.
In fact, the Burmese government would not grant him, the husband, a visa to visit Burma either, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So she had to choose leave or continue to work for her country.
And she sacrificed that. Her husband died. He was only 53 years old, and he died in 1999. Since 1989. Yeah. And the children are still there in London, are they?
Yeah, her kids are in the UK and in the United States. She has two sons. They have not been actively involved in politics, and I respect their decision on that. I think that they want to have a little bit of faith. And also, you know, a woman in a position like her, sometimes people forget, you know, she's such an amazing leader, and people forget that, you know, Mandela and Gandhi and such were actually human beings too, you know, beyond being incredible heroes. And so they need a little bit of space for family support, and I'm sure I can understand why someone wouldn't want their children to be actively involved in, you know, in the human rights movement. They might want just a little bit of support from family members.
Her late husband, who died, is only 53 years old in 1999. He had only seen her since 1989 five times, and the last time that he saw her was Christmas in 1995.
Yep.
This is a brave and strong woman.
It's truly sad with the, beyond sort of being treating the Burmese people cruelly. I mean, it was just their treatment of her, of him, you know, as a human being during his dying days. It was just plain heartless and mean and entirely unnecessary. It would have had nothing, would have meant no change whatsoever for Burma. You know, but they're cruel. They're not nice. They're not nice people, obviously.
Before accepting the next caller, I have to ask, I'd like to know something. You know, I hear about Nelson Mandela, who was similar to Aung San Suu Kyi. We've heard about Gandhi. We've heard about men throughout the world who challenged the establishment. Here is a woman who's undergoing somewhat the same type of treatment and the challenges. Why haven't we talked about her? Why hasn't those so-called feminists talked about her? What do you find is this?
I think what you say is right. I don't think that women's organizations have taken up her cause. I've spoken with a number of different women's organizations about it, and there's certainly not sort of any animosity about it at all. Or, I mean, they're certainly supportive of what we're doing, and they want to try to help in small ways that they can. But they certainly haven't taken her up as a cause and made her a champion. I think what's interesting beyond that, too, is in today's world, a lot of people, you know, the thrust has been to turn to war as a way to, you know, improve human rights and bring democracy to a country. This is a woman who's trying to, at least in our mind, do it a different way, which is to do it peacefully and to do it nonviolently. One should stand up to injustice, and I think there's a good, positive way to do it and a way to do it that's not so helpful, and she's doing it the good way, and it seems like she should get more support for doing it that way from the same people who criticize those who go to war ought to put their full efforts behind supporting someone like her who chooses the nonviolent route. And sometimes the nonviolent route is a little bit slower, but at the end it's more likely, I think, at any rate, to bring true peace.
We have another caller, Jeremy. Lynn from Florida. Lynn, please come and ask your question of our guest.
All right, thanks, Malik. Mr. Woodrum, I was curious. I can't honestly say I know very much about Burma, but in reading a little background while listening to you, I noticed that there are a very large number of Burmese migrant workers in Thailand, many of whom are illegal. And I wonder if you'll comment on how the free trade agreement between Thailand and Burma and other Asian, Southeast Asian nations have affected the economy of Burma and have enriched and empowered the military government in place and have kept a stranglehold on democracy, and if there's anything that can be done to fight that corporate grip. Thanks.
Sure, sure. Well, that's a really good question. I haven't seen any businesses do business, any international companies do business inside Burma in a responsible way. Not any. It's not like some countries where a business could go in and sign a joint agreement with a local business person and employ local people. All deals are signed by the military regime or cronies of the military regime. And so there is no way to sort of do business in a way that's constructive for the people, even if one so desired, which I don't think a lot of these people do anyway. I think they tend to be more interested in profit margins. But even if one did want to, it would be very, very difficult to do that because the military completely dominates the economy inside Burma. As for those who fled to other countries, the Burmese who are in Thailand and other countries who are called migrant workers, this is an interesting point that I think I'm glad that he raised, maybe accidentally. They're actually not migrant workers. They're refugees. There's 2 million Burmese. That's a large percentage of the population, nearly 5%, that have fled from Burma into Thailand. That's just one of the neighbors. The problem is the Thai government doesn't recognize these people as refugees because they think that they wouldn't be able to handle the caseload if they were all in refugee camps. So they call them migrant workers, and they literally turn them away from refugee camps, and they're forced to work in fields of, you know, orange pickers or in canning factories, and they're exploited and treated ruthlessly and terribly by businessmen along the border. But those people are really refugees. They're not sort of migrant workers like one might imagine coming from Mexico or something like that.
So it's not comparable. We have another caller. There's a Greg from Australia. Greg, please ask a question of our guest.
Can you hear me there?
Yes.
It's type of one. Yeah, okay. I can't think of the name of the chap that's on the radio there, but I've been to Burma twice. Flew in from Japan into Rangoon, went to Mandalay, up to Maemyol, and couldn't get into Rubyland area. Now, the problem is, and the second time I went in through Chiang Mai, Thailand, the biggest problem we've got is it's not within the country. I know it's a military rule. It's a socialist country. The problem is that the Western world is buying their lumber, which is mahogany. They've got brilliant mahogany, and we're buying it. So you cannot deal with it in the country. You have to deal with it without. That country is rich as hell. You've got Ruby Land up from Maemyol. I've talked to the people, not in Ruby Land, but in Maemyol. I can tell you many things. I was there in the 90s, and I can tell you many things about Burma now called Myanmar, but it was Burma when I was there. And the point is that you've got to educate the people to check where their lumber's coming from for a start, and the jewelry. This is it. It's not within the country. And China, I don't think, has a real major play in there, myself personally. England had it for England had it for many years.
Excuse me, Caller, I'd like to ask
they all
you a
want
question.
A piece of the pie. This is where the problem starts. Okay, I'll wrap it up. See ya.
Caller, hold for a second. I want to ask you a question. Caller, are you saying that the root of the problem in Burma is lumber? And it's because we are buying this as an economic issue. If we are buying their products from Burma, then therefore this is, in fact, the issue. Do you agree with that, Jeremy? That's what it seems like the caller has suggested.
Well, it's not the only problem, but it is a major problem. I would say the lumber trade is one of the pillars of support for the military regime. It's not as important as natural gas is for the military regime, and maybe on par with gems and with rubies. He correctly pointed that out. These guys are making tons of money from cutting down their old growth forest and selling it. And whereas in the 1990s it was being imported to the United States and Europe and elsewhere, now the vast majority of that is going through Thailand, it's going through China, especially through China. That is where that is going these days. So Chinese purchases of Burmese lumber are one of the major sort of pillars of support for the Burmese regime. And it's actually... Perhaps he misspoke. It's actually, there is some mahogany, but the major one there is teak wood. And so if you're looking at those who build boats or people who buy lawn furniture, if you buy any teak and it says made in Thailand or made in Burma or made in Myanmar or made in China, you can be almost positive that it came from Burma, that it originated in Burma, even if it says from one of those other countries.
Is the United States of America one of the major trading partners with Burma?
No. It was when we started our campaign, and we were able to get Congress to pass a law that banned the imports of goods from Burma. So that was a very major positive move and cut off probably $500 million of trade with the regime every year. Now, there's a loophole in that, and that's not good. And the loophole is that if goods are substantially transformed in other countries and then exported to the United States, that is still legal. So if you take a teak log from the Burmese jungle, turn it into a piece of furniture in Thailand, or even, in fact, even turn it into boards and export it to the United States, that is still legal. That's not something that we've been able, unfortunately, to be able to pass into law.
Well, out of curiosity, has any other countries had such imposing embargoes as well on Burma?
Well, the European Union has done some. They haven't gone as far as the United States. They have banned the import, or they have banned European investment in companies that do business directly with the Burmese military regime. But what's unfortunate is that they actually made a list of those companies, and they made exceptions for the oil and gas companies. So it's actually kind of a ludicrous policy. They said, we won't do business with the Burmese regime except for Total Oil, which is the largest company in all of France, and which built a natural gas pipeline in Burma that's likely bringing tens of millions and probably hundreds of millions of dollars to the Burmese regime. They carved out an exception for it.
I think the caller, Greg, from Australia, impressed me with that particular analysis economically I'd never thought to question something like that, and I'm glad that he actually called in to ask that.
It's a great point, and Burma is sort of the classic example of a country that's rich in natural resources and therefore now allows the military to hang on for a very long time. It's similar in that way, similar to Nigeria in the 1980s and early 1990s. So much wealth, yet the people see none of it.
The people, they reap none of it. We're speaking with Jeremy Woodrum from the U.S. Campaign for Burma about Dong Aung San Suu Kyi, who is an old nonviolent and activist and leader of the National League for Democracy in Burma. I'd like to know, what do you think, when do you think that that she will be released?
I don't know. I think she will be released when China tells the Burmese regime to release her. That's my best guess. And they do have the leverage to make that move, and we need to press them to make it. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, a couple of weeks ago, we and some other people worked on a campaign. We got 59 former presidents and prime ministers from Africa, Europe, Latin America, Asia, the United States, Canada, all over the world to join together to call for the release of Aung San Suu Kyi. And the Burmese regime declined. They did not release her, but this put Burma on the front page of newspapers for the first time in a very, very long time. And subsequently, it looked like China was getting a little bit nervous about this. So I think that the more we're able to turn up the heat, the greater the likelihood of her release.
You know, Hillary Clinton is, of course, running for president. I'm wondering if she's aware of a woman who's certainly comparable to her, if not even more so, facing such challenges and overcoming them. I'm wondering if she were president of the United States of America, if she would help another strong and brilliant woman in another country overcome those particular obstacles.
Well, I would hope so, and I'd have to give her kudos and say that she's been supportive while she's been in the Congress.
She has?
Yeah, she has been supportive, but she has not been a leader on the issue. She hasn't sort of taken it as her own and pressed forward with it. But she has sort of signed resolutions and supported efforts to press for change inside Burma. And she's done that without hesitation.
Impressive. Did not know that about Hillary Clinton. Perhaps some of us will give her another look over.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the key for everyone who are working on Burma is for people to put, you know, their sort of words into action. And you know, that's, I think, a common request from human rights advocates on many, many different issues. It's one thing to sort of call for the release of the world's only imprisoned Nobel Peace Prize recipient. I mean, that should be a no-brainer. But to go further and actually do something about it, to organize a delegation to China to meet with the Chinese leadership, to fly to New York to meet with the Secretary General, to organize a press conference, I mean, to do the sort of nuts and bolts of advocacy that could possibly press for change, that's a different matter, and that's where we're asking people to step to the plate on that.
Thank you, Jeremy Woodrum, for joining us here at The People Speak. And you are from the U.S. Campaign for Burma. In particular, you are to help Da Aung San Suu Kyi. And I am absolutely impressed with her work. I'm hoping that this particular hour will stimulate discussion amongst the listeners. It certainly has piqued the interest of many callers. And I appreciate your help. I really do. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining us.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I want to say this before I leave. You know, I was looking at some of her quotes, and I thought her quotes were absolutely priceless. I know of many quotes. I was wondering if you knew of any quotes that you would like to leave us with.
Yeah, sure. I think her quote that appeals to me the most, especially for those of us who do live in societies where we do have the opportunity to speak up, should respond to this, and her quote is, "Please use your liberty to promote ours." I think it's incumbent on all of us who live in a place where we can speak up as loudly as possible and organize and rally and work together to bring change to help those who can.
And that sums it up here at People Speak with Jeremy Woodrum. Please use your liberty to help ours. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining us here at The People Speak.
Thank you, too.
You take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the fast storm. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.